Oh, you got it. Okay, thank you. Recordings of past intention speakers can be downloaded from our website at intoaction.group. We ask at this time that you sign it, you pound down your cell phones, and that's it. That's all we have, Claire. So would you please help me give a warm welcome to Claire from the Larchmont 12 and 12.
Hi, my name is Claire and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Claire.
Sorry, this is my first time like sharing my story, so bear with me if it's bad. All right, so my sobriety date is July, my final sobriety date, we'll get to that, is July 16th of 2022. My home group, as was mentioned, is the Larchmont 12 and 12 Big Book Study. I have a sponsor. She knows she's my sponsor. And do I have a service? I had a service position. I was GSR, but I ended up trading that one off because I'm back in school now. It just didn't work out. But I'm just picking up service wherever I can, even if it's not like title service, just opening up the meeting or putting out cookies, stuff like that. It's honestly the stuff I kind of like best. All right, so what it was like. So I was born and raised in Norfolk, Virginia. And I live with my mom, dad, and my older brother. I had a pretty comfortable upbringing, just like economically lived in a good neighborhood, went to the good schools. Even when there was, you know, times of conflict or it was like tumultuous at home, it still looked good. So that's what matters, right? And I lived near extended family, so I was close. My cousins were basically like my sister's best friends, along with my grandma, who was kind of like a second mom, Grammy. And I had the relatively tight-knit, close group of friends pretty much all throughout my childhood. Just mostly girls from the neighborhood or, you know, kids we'd hang out with. Because growing up in the same place, which for Norfolk being a Navy town was kind of unusual. Yeah, we pretty much stuck together. And I was a good student. I was always like a pleasure to have in class, and which is nerdy, but it's true. I used to resent that, but now I see it as a good thing. I, you know, did Girl Scouts, band, dance class. I was too sensitive for like anything with competition or conflict, so, and that was probably another thing, that just that always wanting to crawl out of my own skin. I was an extremely sensitive, like empathetic, just very emotional child. Everything I felt was very strong. The story I usually tell was the first time I ever went to the movie theater. I was small enough to need a car seat on top of the seat. My granny took me to see Piglet's Big Movie, and I could not finish the movie because I was just crying, like sobbing hysterically that Piglet couldn't find his way home. And at like 3-4 years old, I didn't realize like this is a Disney movie, he's gonna find his way home. It was just, it made me so sad. But just everything, whether it was something fun that I was happy about or I was moved by something. I'm even that way today, but I guess more like a stable adult version, learning how to deal with that. I internalized a lot, was easily overwhelmed. And even just, I don't know, even sensitivity to just like sounds or always get my feelings hurt, or, you know, feeling like people are judging me even when they're not thinking about me. There's nothing worse than being like the biggest kid in the class, both like height and like, I don't know, kind of chunky too, because, you know, a lot of us go through that and like wanting to sink into the walls, but like always standing out. And it just, I don't know, like I said, always wanting to crawl out of my own skin and like wanting to please everybody or more importantly, not have anyone be mad at me, which is kind of impossible, especially when you're dealing with other spiritually sick people. And it eats away at you. And so my first drunk, we're in AA, so it's kind of the same thing, it was spring of my 8th grade year. I was 14, and it wasn't even like an exciting party or anything like that. It was just kind of one of those moments. It was after school. I was at home by myself. Mom was away with, I don't know, Outer Banks, probably like book club, PTA type friends, as moms do. And my dad was still at work. And this was before, like, liquor was not allowed in the house, because I'll get to that one too. My dad also struggled with drinking heavily, alcohol abuse. I know you can't call someone alcoholic, but and pretty much like everything that Al-Anon tells you not to do is kind of what my mom did. She brought up recently, like, wow, I think I just did looking back on it, I did the opposite of everything you're supposed to do, like trying to control it or count it or ban certain things, and then he'd get more mad. And to myself, I was thinking like, yeah, duh. But to her, I'm like, you know what? Hindsight's 20/20. So yeah, it was after school. I think it was like triple sec. Like, some of you don't even drink straight, but I didn't care. I'm like, also thinking, you know, I'm going into high school. I need to catch up with those kids, and I don't know. So I just poured myself a plastic cup so I could throw it away, and did the old like fill it with water thing that a lot of kids do. And suddenly, it almost felt like I was floating because the weight of the world was lifted off my shoulders. I suddenly wasn't insecure. I, you know, didn't have all these insecurities eating away at me. I could finally, I always saw it as being able to, like, shut my mind off. And that was actually something I struggled with, the idea of not being able to drink. Like, how can I survive without having that off switch? I need a break from my own mind. You know, it was exciting. It was an escape. I'm pretty sure I went to, like, the school play. I don't know, something dumb that night. Nobody caught me, but... And then would just kind of drink here and there when, I mean... Usually it was something swiped from the parents, as most like 14, 15 year olds do. Just kind of when I could. It wasn't as frequent, but you know, when I could, it was like the most exciting thing to happen to me. Then comes high school. I have a good start. Like, that's fun. And then it was January 2014, my freshman year of high school. One of my best friends of that tight-knit friend group, my mom woke me up one morning and told me that she had attempted to take her own life and was basically in the ICU for 5 days. I guess it was like lacking oxygen to the brain, and they ended up having to take her off life support, and she passed away. And that's a lot to, I mean, you're already taking kids that are emotionally unstable as it is, and then something like that, that's traumatic. Like, it just, besides even dealing with the grief itself, it just kind of the disillusionment of watching a 15-year-old die, you know, just causing conflict between friends, and it was very tense. And then things were increasingly tense at my house because my father, he suffered from epilepsy and was losing control over that. And just kind of, well, that's step one, you know, your life is unmanageable. But of course, like, you know, the patriarch of the family, you're not going to admit that's unmanageable. Like, good God. So instead, you just get angry and drink more, I suppose. So it's almost like I couldn't find solace, like, with my friends or at school, because you never knew what was going on there, and then at home. Well, then, finally, I have the summer. Sophomore year starts, and it was literally after I came home from, I was at marching band practice, and just, like, complaining about that to my mom. And then I hear the front door open, and then she just, like, spits it out, that my dad the night before, so that part about controlling drinking, they had gotten into an argument because she said he could only have one drink if he was going to drive us home, and or two drinks or something. Apparently, it's unreasonable to ask someone not to drunk drive, but just like, you know, the whole, it's embarrassing when your son has to repark the car so the neighbors don't see it all. And so he had decided to walk to a neighborhood bar that night, University Pizza, I grew up in Larchmont in Norfolk. And on his way home late in the night, because the cab never came, he got brutally assaulted a couple blocks from my house and was kind of left there unconscious. He had a black eye. His, of course, with epilepsy, that makes that even worse. There was irreparable head injuries, plus drinking more on top of it because you're pissed off, and he just wasn't the same. There was a lot of fear in those couple weeks. I didn't know what was going to happen, and then he ended up passing away a couple weeks after that in his sleep, being picked up from school and just told that he's gone. So, yeah, especially after having a lot of tragedy and a lot of very public tragedy when I didn't want any attention on me and just wanted to be normal, or if not normal, at least not like, I don't know, a sob story. I became very depressed, withdrawn, just kind of focused on school, and my main goal was to get out of Norfolk and never look back. You know, go somewhere where, like, nobody knows my background. I could just have a fresh new start. But, of course, wherever I go, I bring me with me. So, yeah, in June 2017, I graduated high school. Then that August, I moved to Greenville, North Carolina for college. And even though it was... went to East Carolina for 3 years. Even though ECU was only like 2.5 hours away, give or take, it was almost like another planet. Nobody knew me. Nobody knew my family. I think I had another cousin who went there who I forgot went there, but he wasn't social anyways. And so it's like I could pretty much, it was this clean start. And then, sorry, yes. So then ECU, I basically, the summer before, I had a good friend visiting. We've been friends forever, but she ended up growing up in Texas. She was visiting. We decided to order fake IDs online. It was, like, took our pictures in the American Eagle dressing room at Lynn Haven. I don't know. It was dumb, but they worked. So, so they worked because they're scannable. So me with my little Connecticut ID went down to the, I don't know, whatever the sketchiest convenience store was, and I would supply our dorm with, or like our end of Garrett Hall with the beer, Four Loko, whatever like the crappiest, like lowest price, highest ABV alcohol you could find. And you know, I was still, basically I was still wildly insecure. I thought there was no other way I could make friends. I didn't want to actually open up to people. So if, you know, they like me for this, then, so that kind of started to cement the idea that, like, this is what I have to offer people. I did not want to get to know people on a deeper level. Even when I thought I did, it was like pulling teeth trying to get me to open up. But yeah, I had a lot of fun there. It started out as fun, you know, because basically it's, I don't know, Uptown Greenville's a lot like Chuck E. Cheese for heavy drinking college students. So, you know, it's like my life was finally exciting. I was going to these clubs. I didn't even like to dance at clubs. I would just kind of get drunk and flop down. But as long as I could drink, and, you know, made me, like, malleable. Like, I could fit into any situation. Like I said before, like, I hate loud noises. I don't want to be in crowds with weird men reaching out to me. But if I was drunk, then, you know, I enjoyed doing it. But it's because I enjoy being drunk, not because I actually enjoyed the activity. And then, oh, and I was also a part of... there, I was studying hospitality management. So anyone in like the hospitality industry, that whole sect, those, it was like the hard partying set at a school that's already known for partying. So, you know, that was, but it became, it kind of went from fun. It would go back and forth, like teeter a little. Situations where it went from being like fun and exciting and like, oh, she's a fun party girl, to I think I remember one dude at my friend's party. I ended up blacking out and waking up in the ER with a black eye because I was getting into hard drugs too. You know, drinking. Basically, it was almost like a passive suicide after a point because I was just so depressed. The only thing I looked forward to was getting loaded. And remember, he looked at me because I was just, you know, shoveling things in, shots, pills, whatever. And he's like, is that white girl okay? And I thought to myself, like, no, I'm not. Help. And just situations becoming more dangerous and like, unhinged and concerning. Situations that could have ended up a lot worse than they did, such as waking up in the ER, not even remembering leaving my friend's apartment, or just waking up in random places. I think like my RA was about to put out a missing persons report for me. Then I come home in my Halloween costume because I woke up at some frat house and ended up finding my phone. It's almost like because I could pull things out of the fire at the last minute, it's like, see, I'm okay. Like, nothing happened. Like, I'm okay this time. And so I kind of kept writing them off as one-offs. I was even able to justify the ER thing to my mom. Like, oh, it was just, I didn't eat beforehand, and I just had a little too much to drink, and then kind of left out all the other stuff. So it was required for the, for all hospitality management students, and I was on kind of like a hotels, resorts, and then like food and beverage service track with my degree. It was required for all of us to have a 400-hour internship at some point. And I was a member of the Club Managers Association of America, because I still managed to like be involved in stuff, and kind of that's the other thing. Like I mentioned with hospitality, you can still like kind of be a hard party or a little unhinged, but still manage to, it's very work hard, play hard. So as long as you can keep your you can keep your stuff together well enough to show up and do a good job. They don't care what you put in your body, what you do after hours, or even on hours, as long as you can do your work. So I took, and we went to this conference in Nashville. I took an internship at a very fancy, old school style country club an hour east of Pittsburgh. And that's kind of something I jumped into. Like, I was even talking about it earlier today. I had never been to the mountains. I had never, you know, driven out there. I don't think I'd ever been to Pennsylvania. It was completely, I mean, it was basically a 7-hour drive away, but a whole different world. And I load my stuff up in the car and to go live and work there. And that was very much, for anyone who knows me, I'm not a morning person at all. So they never put me on from like a 7 to 3. So I was always the 3 to 11. Then there were like the locals who worked there, then interns, then the foreign visa employees. And we're all around a similar age set. I mean, people, I was probably the youngest, maybe a couple people younger than me. I was 20 years old when I was at this internship. And basically, you know, we'd all get off work around 11, go back to the big intern house and just drink and party all night until, I don't know, 2-3 in the morning, rinse, repeat. Even now saying that, I don't know how I did it, but I guess I just did. I guess it did get to me because I had a, in fall 2019, now this was before anyone knew what COVID was or it was a thing. So I was taking like, I'm going to take a semester off for my mental health because basically my mom came to visit me in Pittsburgh and I had a breakdown and just, it was overwhelming. Stuff was starting to catch up with me. So, I stayed home during that. Still went down to Greenville to party here and there. Went for my 21st birthday. I don't know. If I needed drugs and couldn't find any around me, because, like, who do I know in Norfolk anymore? Then, you know, go down there. Still had my little friends. But it kind of did begin to dawn on me that I had a problem, because before working at the internship, I didn't realize I had a problem, really. Or I realized, like, I felt like crap, but I didn't think I had a drinking problem because I drank like everyone else. So, who, you know, I mean, it was on the heavier end, but it's still on the spectrum, not like unreasonable. But it's like, I realized I had a problem that I couldn't stop or cut down in any, like, significant way. And then that really started to scare me. And just more of the same incidents here and there with just taking it too far, going on the apology tour. I'm not going to drink for 2 days and then, or I'm not going to drink anymore and then drink in private, or and then slowly like ease my way back into people not yelling at me for it. And then March of 2020, which we all know happened then, I was back in school for basically like a month and a half, and then I moved back home because of a pandemic. So I was living with my mom again, and I mean, now that I think about it, kind of moved back in and haven't moved out since. And I just spiraled deeper into drinking, more of the, especially my best friend back in Greenville, you know, some of the harder drugs. She would overlook my drinking if, you know, we just kind of kept the drug thing on the down low. Remember, I got them sent in the mail to me at one point. That's risky, but you shouldn't do that. inside, it was like a padded envelope, inside of an envelope, inside of an envelope, inside of a Hallmark card, and I'm like, wow.
That's suspicious.
Yeah, that's, you know, when you care enough to send the best. And basically, loved ones began to express concern, and I began to express blind rage at them for bringing up concern. You know, especially when my mom, like, I feel really bad now, like, oh my God, she's so worried, and she's basically seeing the same pattern with her kid that she saw with her husband who ended up dying, and I'm like, it's your fault for having kids with an alcoholic, and that's, yeah, that's not cool. And especially with her, I kind of felt like she was almost the opposite, like, basically the whole, like, very good in school part and, you know, got along with people except, like, didn't have a substance abuse problem or mental illness and was just kind of good at everything, always managed to stay afloat. And I'm like, what does she understand about, like, any of this as I'm spiraling out? And that fear of judgment usually ends up being, like, assumption of judgment that's not there is really just concern. Then what happened? Okay, so like I said, my sobriety date is July 16th of 2022. I began attempting to get sober, or kind of had a big, it's like, I don't know if any of y'all, like, multiple white chippers have ever had the situation where it's like, this is it. This is the catastrophic situation that is going to keep and get me sober. And then, like, it doesn't. And then there's a worse one a couple months later. It's almost like if I say that, it's bound to get worse. And no, you're not going to stay sober just from feeling guilty over one thing. So, yeah, November of 2020. It was actually, like, exactly 4 years ago, now that I think about it. I was 21, I was just about to turn 22. I just had this whole breakdown, you know, went off on my friends, went off on my cousin, who was like my best friend, basically. I mean, got very ugly with her because she expressed concern to my mom, and of course, I'm like, why are you telling my mom this? And then just getting vicious, and especially that feeling anger deeply. Even today, I know I have that tendency to hit below the belt when I start passing a certain point. Now I just, like, you know I need to separate myself, like, you know, evaluate. But yeah, and I still feel bad about that to this day. Oh, I had planned her surprise 21st birthday party and then told her about it and said I was canceling it because, like, I hated her and just all this really ugly stuff. And kind of, I thought I would never recover from that. And then ended up going to Virginia Beach Psych and was like, I'm going to detox and get sober. Then it was, I think I went to one meeting that I found on Google at a New Day. I pull up and I'm like, there's a bar here next door. Like, what's going on? I'm like, I'm scared. I don't like AA. So, because you know everything from just that one. And then, so then I ended up staying at Virginia Beach Psych again. So that was November 2020, and May, July, and September of 2021. So that, if for those of y'all that like to count, that's four times in less than a year. After the third stay in July, so I got out early August, I told myself I was committed to doing AA, and, like, I, you know, was just finding meetings here and there. That was the first time I ever went to my home group, Larchmont, which, of course, as I said, I grew up in the neighborhood of Larchmont. It was the same church I had my Girl Scout meetings at. My mom was the troop leader. I actually tried to go to two other meetings I found earlier that Monday, And then finally, this was the final one. Like, I think their doors were locked or something. It wasn't there. I got lost. So finally, Larchmont, 8 p.m., and I'm like, well, crap, I guess I'll go here. It's going to be like my mom's entire book club. Like, they're going to know I'm an alcoholic. As if, like, I mean, why do people go to meetings and, like, if they're there? But, of course, I was just thinking about myself. And then that was the first time I actually could see myself, like, doing this. That was sort of my entry to AA. Sort of like doing this as a thing long term. Like, maybe I wouldn't hate it, and maybe I could, like, I don't know, keep all my teeth, and people who, like, look like me, or who look like the people, you know, my social circle, or just, I was familiar with all different kinds of people in there, and everyone was just really friendly. I remember, because I said, like, I didn't know where to find meetings, I was just Googling stuff. And I remember this really nice lady walked up to me and she started to hand me the paper meeting guide. And she's like, hi, nice to meet you. Here's a list of all the, like, local meetings. They have it separated by day. And then this other blonde chick walks up and she's like, no one uses paper here. And then snatches my phone out of my hand and downloads the meeting guide app with the little chair. And those people are my current sponsor and current girlfriend, respectively. So that's, it's crazy how life works. Then after that, I was... Oh, no, I ended up not going back to AA after that September. I'm like, I can do this on my own. Everyone in AA's catty, and, you know, I have a girlfriend now. I can stay sober for her, in case anyone hasn't tried this at home. Like, that doesn't work either. And then just kind of, like, ghosted that first sponsor, ghosted AA. You know, those people are a bunch of sheep, and I know how to think for myself. And well, then by that February, I was in the Farley Center up in Williamsburg. So I guess I graduated from psych center to, like, full-blown rehab. I'm like, well, there's no way I can finesse this now. Like, I'm in rehab. There's, you can't really say that you're normal or a normal drinker if you've been to rehab. And I always thought of that as, like, an other people sort of thing. Like, I don't know. I was born 98, so, like, growing up in the early 2000s, I would think of people like Lindsay Lohan or whoever, like, celebrity rehab, and they're all passed out in the back seat. And it was nothing like that. And then I did make some friends there. Had a couple more relapses. I probably, out of the ones I've saved, like 10 to 15 white chips, I know I have more than that. Because there was that, I mean, I even remember at one point in that first run of AA, when they're like, you can pick this up if you have alcohol on your breath. Like, I was that one with the alcohol on their breath as I'm, you know, drinking. I swear this is not alcohol tonight. But, you know, like, just a suspicious cop that I'm like, sure, I'll try this new way of life. Like, woohoo. And then, of course, like, I'm there drunk in an AA meeting, and I'm telling everyone how much better I am than you, which, that's an alcoholic mind. I can say that here, and people get it. And then... Oh, finally. So we fast forward a couple more relapses after Farley. Couple sponsors for, like, a hot minute. And then the night of July 15th into the early hours of the 16th, because I was still drinking then, that's why I count that as my sobriety date. I want to be, like, technical if I'm going to start taking this seriously. I really want to earn that coin. Excuse me. which is something I thought like would just be impossible for me. I'd always be chilling on relapse row. I don't know, just caught up in just resentment, wasn't doing anything I was supposed to do, and just kind of, I don't know, hated my life, like, is this it? And then just drank again. It wasn't even anything exciting, just 7-Eleven, Mike's Hard. Ended up linking up with a rehab friend, because they're like the rehab friends who maybe you'll meet one who actually like stays, goes to meetings, stuff like that. And then there's the ones where it's like, well, if I ever want drugs again, this might be a good number to keep. Just in case. This was one of those. And, you know, linked up with her. Some weirdo from Tinder was driving her around. I don't know. I just remember waking up that next morning on like her dirty bedroom carpet, wanting to go home so bad, and like just wanting to be back at my house. It was almost that it wasn't the, you know, final drink that it didn't take like a catastrophic moment of like getting into so much trouble, I'm swearing it off forever, or, you know, getting arrested or something. Like, it wasn't even that cool. It was just waking up and I'm like, there's nothing here for me anymore. You know, I'm unhappy with where I'm at right now. This is back then, not like right now. Like, I'm unhappy with where I'm at right now, but like, this isn't going to do anything for me. I have to do something different. And, you know, it's almost that acceptance. It's like a weird kind of grief where it's like you're manically like searching to recapture those moments. Cause I'm not one of those people to say like, oh, the worst day I've had sober is better than the best day I've had drunk, or however the saying goes. That's not true. I've had some fun days drunk. I'm not going to recapture that if I pick up a drink again. It's, you know, it like that's gone. And you know, that's okay. Things are just different. I think just accepting that things are different, you know? And I ended up asking that first sponsor from the meeting guide story earlier to be my sponsor again. And which, I mean, that took swallowing my pride, like getting a girlfriend then ghosting your sponsor, that sort of. So I'm like, when I knew I really needed to get to work, I'm like, hey, you know, can you? And of course, you know, pretty sure I asked, like, I just want to make sure you don't have beef with me. And she's like, what? No. Like, are you? And, yeah, she kept me pretty, and she's still my sponsor today. But especially at first, I needed that structure of, like, I remember the first night, I was supposed to call her at 6:30 p.m. because it's not a morning person. Some people seem to think a.m. when I say 6:30, I'm like, ooh, no. And we're supposed to read from the big book. And of course, went over that, I'm like, okay. And then I forget to call one night. Then I call the next night. She's like, where was your phone call last night? And I'm like, I just forgot. Well, don't forget. Like set a reminder, do something. And then, you know, we were supposed to, we read like a page or two from the big book every night. Excuse me. Up until like step four, when you have to like write stuff down. Excuse me. And then of course she's like, okay, like let's open up the big book. Where's your big book? And I'm like, I don't have it. It's like elsewhere. And she's like, what did I tell you? I'm like, well, I didn't think you meant it. Like, but kind of that, I don't know, that crazy expectation of like saying you're going to do something and then doing it. That's kind of where I first actually started doing that. And I think, I don't know, I mean, for different sponsors do it different ways. I think the reading every day, I needed that touchstone along with like, you know, the 90 and 90 and the, but at that point, you know, and don't get me wrong, I still need my meetings too, and especially my home group every week. I can feel it when I, you know, miss and start getting that restless, irritable discontent. But, you know, it's like I knew people in the rooms. I could go and sit in a meeting and not participate pretty much and say I went, but like that reading directly with the sponsor out of the text was, it was what I definitely needed. And kind of that getting down to work, you know, not all, actually there's a lot of progress in AA that doesn't necessarily, you know, look like a Hallmark card or an inspirational poster or something. It's just like it's ugly crying, or it's just doing what you need to do because you're supposed to do it. And, you know, I don't know, just living life. But apparently that's like hard for us naturally. And learning how to just be a participant in this world again. Probably the biggest thing in my early sobriety was doing the fourth and fifth step, because that was one I never got to. The other ones I could kind of read and say, yep, I get it, even though my mind's elsewhere. But the fourth and fifth step, that was like, I remember I thought I would never get through that, and was just, I don't know, writing down all these resentments, pulling out all these things I like packed away so neatly and just shoved down, and then like suddenly I'm beefing about something on the phone to my sponsor, and then it reminds her of something that she was mad about too from childhood, or I don't know. It was definitely an emotional wreck, but we got through it. I think, yeah, sitting down and doing that was kind of really where that turn was for me, and like, I'm gonna make it, or this is gonna be okay. And even admitting, even in those times where it's like, what part of the promises where it's like, is it the 10th step, I think, where it says, like, you won't have the desire to drink anymore, you'll recoil from it like a hot flame. Yeah, sorry, I don't have the book in front of me, but I'm loosely paraphrasing. You know, before you reach that spot, because there's work that comes in between that. And trust me, I tried to do it without work, and because I love shortcuts and not doing effort. But that didn't work. And just kind of reaching out to those around you, whether it's supportive family or my fellowship, just loved ones in general. I even remember within those early days, like, you know, I could have easily given up. I think it was 60 days sober. I was about to walk out to my car. I had my debit card, and then something in me, it had to be like higher power, God, just turned back around. And then I gave it to my mom. I'm like, excuse me. I'm like, I don't trust myself with this. Like, can you hang on to it? And just that asking for help. They often say, like, you are not alone, or you don't have to do this alone, but I really need to be told, like, you cannot do this alone. Because I'm like, you know, no, you can leave me alone, thanks. Like, you know, that's for stupid people who can't do it by themselves. But, you know, again, I'll literally be at rock bottom and then still justifying how I'm better than everyone. And then, I guess, a couple more minutes, what it's like today. So, I did finally make it to that 1 year, because I have over 2 years now. Actually, for my 1 year, I end up throwing a party, because I'm like, why not? Like, I thought I would never do this. This is like, and still, it took me a couple months to actually start, you know, anyone with a year or more, like, start raising my hand. I still kind of wonder sometimes, like, I'll still offer my help, but wonder, like, are you sure, like, you know, you want me to talk to this person? You want me to have this responsibility? Because I get, there is some humility in spending so long just, like, not having it together and knowing that we're all, you know, something my sponsor says, I mean, all we've got is today or what you've done today for your sobriety. Of course, there's those experiences leading up to it, but, I mean, we're all only one drink away from a relapse, so, you know, because, of course, bringing my outside ideas inside the rooms of AA, like, well, there's a hierarchy of, like, the people who have more time and more clout and whatever, and it's not like that, so kind of getting walked through those ideas, and, I mean, I wouldn't have it any other way. So yeah, like I said, still living with mom, but now I don't resent it. I like living with her, spending time with her. I can actually be present for things. I'm still, you know, have my friends, that, girlfriend I was talking about, having our own programs of sobriety, and getting sober for myself, not for anyone else, because like I said, like, that doesn't work. Because then as soon as, like, you get even the most mild argument, it's like, well, screw you, I'm going to drink. But I also think through those times, you know, it kind of took an alcoholic to be that, have that, like, patience, loving, tolerant, whatever, who, like, has understood where I've been, because I could be a nightmare at times, but someone who saw me as a sick person and not just a dumpster fire nuisance. Yeah, I'm back in school now to finish that degree. I dropped out of ECU. I'm at ODU now. Coming up to the end of the semester, so stressed by that, but it's good problems to have. Remind myself, and I even see so much of a difference now. Like, I'll actually, I know, talk to other people and, like, participate, and, like, I value my education, just staying open-minded about, you know, where life takes me, whether it's career, this program, friendships, kind of seeing that everything happens for a reason. But of course, when you're in the middle of, like, the bad parts, like, you know, shut up, I don't want to hear that. Like, why would God want to cause me pain? Because that victim mentality. But then kind of seeing how things do ultimately end up working out. I mean, even discovering my home group, you know, first two meetings I go to, like, the doors are locked or I get lost. Like, there's a reason for that. So kind of that learn to let go and let God. It's easier said than done. And yeah, I guess I know I'm not always perfect in my program, but there's always when I'm like, I need to start doing better. Whether it's daily reflections, going to meetings, just I feel myself getting funky. It's like, well, start, if you want to start doing better, you know, why not now? And just kind of pick up each day where it is. And yeah, that's about it, I think. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Claire.